This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
I answered, like, personal conflicts and questions I had and resolved them.
The question was not exactly, you know, will we see a therapeutic or clinical response? The question was understanding what's the biology behind both, you know, what happens on the drug and also what happens afterwards.
What is the mechanism of the experience and what is the mechanism of the therapeutic effect? And are those the same?
Earlier this summer, we talked about the shroom boom that's happening in Missouri, how fungi foraging has increased and why there's a multi-state effort underway to document the DNA of mushrooms found in the wild. Well, that's not the only shroom-focused project happening in these parts. At the Washington University School of Medicine, researchers have been looking into neurobiological explanations behind the mind-bending effects of psilocybin, the active compound in magic mushrooms. And today, the British journal Nature published a study about that research, findings that could accelerate the development of drugs that treat mental illness. Joining me in studio to talk about that are two authors of the study. Dr. Joshua Siegel, instructor in psychiatry at Washington University School of Medicine. Hello.
Hello, thank you for having us.
And we also have Dr. Ginger Nickel, associate professor of psychology and of psychiatry and researcher in the Healthy Mind Lab at Washington University School of Medicine. Hello to you too.
Hello, it's nice to be here.
Yes, and congratulations to you on publishing your research today.
Thank you.
So both of you were on the show back in 2022, but for those who didn't hear it then or aren't familiar with this subject, let's start with some basics. Dr. Siegel, what is psilocybin and how does it work in the brain?
Well, this has to be basics, right? Okay, so the first one, I guess, is easy. Psilocybin, you already said, is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms. It's a psychedelic, so that's the same class of drugs as LSD, ayahuasca, peyote, and these drugs all target the same specific receptor in the brain, which causes this kind of these very powerful and unique psychedelic effects, and it's a serotonin receptor, one of the multiple serotonin receptors, and the way that it works, I could probably spend 20 minutes answering. we spent 4 years answering to answer that question, right? So it's complicated, but you could say that that particularly at higher doses, this receptor that it targets seems to be key to keeping the brain in synchrony, and when you take a psychedelic and the psilocybin washes over the brain, it alters the way that neurons are functioning and activates this receptor and kind of desynchronizes many parts of the brain.
Mm-hmm. So is that the bending part of the mind bending?
Yeah. I mean, the parts that it desynchronizes, that it's most affecting are the parts of the brain that are core to one's sense of self, one's sense of time, space.
Mm-hmm. So this is obviously not the first study about psilocybin's potential to help people who live in particular with mental illnesses. But what is it that the study that was published today, what does it add to what's known about this subject already?
Well, so I think one of the big motivators has been some of the clinical trials that have come out recently showing benefit in depression has been kind of the main focus. There's been a number of trials in treatment-resistant depression, but also some other psychiatric indications. And so that was one of the big drivers of us doing this research, because this research, actually was in healthy adults and so not a clinical population. And the question was not exactly, will we see a therapeutic or clinical response? The question was understanding what's the biology behind both, what happens on the drug and also what happens afterwards that might help us understand why there's this potential clinical utility.
Mm-hmm. We want to hear from you as well. Have you had an experience with psychedelics that affected your way of thinking? What was that like? We welcome your questions, too. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Or you can send us a note on X at STL On Air. We're also taking your emails at talk@stlpr.org. Dr. Nickel, the brain is a very complex and mysterious thing. It does a whole lot we don't yet understand. Why does it matter how psilocybin works? I mean, what understanding does that give us?
Well, that's a great question. And, like Josh said, we've spent the last few years trying to understand that better through psilocybin. One of the reasons it's very attractive to study when you're trying to understand mechanism and how the brain changes when you use a drug or a substance, you have to be able to measure something as it's happening. Mm-hmm. And most of the drugs that we use in mental health don't work really, really fast. And they don't typically cause such profound changes in people's experience of the world so rapidly. And so because that change that people experience is so proximal to taking a dose, it offers an opportunity for us to actually measure, not exactly in real time, but pretty close to real time, what is happening in the brain? What are the changes that go along with this sort of transformational, mystical, mind-bending experience mm-hmm. that people describe? And we were able to actually track that right. in this study. And so one of the things that we had to figure out was putting people in a scanner while they were on psilocybin, on a high dose of psilocybin. And so we were able to tackle that and got a lot of really excellent data to try and understand this process, which I think will help us understand not just processes that happen in normal humans, but how do drugs work and where can we start to engineer new drugs and different treatments and combination therapies of a drug and a behavioral intervention, say, and personalize it to your brain and what your brain needs.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the clinical trial itself, just to sort of get a picture of what that was like. So you and your team administered psilocybin to 7 participants. How is it that you prepared them for what was going to, you know, happen with them and in them and maybe to them as well?
Well, this was definitely a team effort, and we all learned from each other, but there's quite a bit of information just out in the public domain about how people are prepared in research studies. So as Josh mentioned, there had already been quite a bit of data and publications sort of describing that process for people with mental health conditions. Since this was a healthy group of people, mm-hmm. We didn't really do a lot of psychotherapy or try to dig to solve a problem or find a problem to solve, but rather we sort of prepared people for the experience by, number one, seeking out people who were healthy and had an understanding of what a psychedelic experience was, mm-hmm. so had either had an experience or just, you know, were well-versed in understanding that so that they wouldn't be surprised. Their first psychedelic experience wouldn't hopefully not be in the scanner
right,
with us.
Right.
And so that was part of it. But then preparing people to get something out of the experience, to prepare them for what we think, you know, is really important therapeutically, which is that sense of mystical connection to something bigger and meaningful. And so we sort of walked them through how to think about how to prepare, you know, in the days leading up to the dosing session. What are things that are important to you? What are your values? Are there challenges that you're facing? Are there questions that you are trying to answer about your future? So kind of coaching people to think about those sorts of things and then to use the session on the drug to sort of process that. And then we gave them some time to process after that session. But in a normal psychotherapy study, you might have 7 to 10 to 14 hours of therapy to process, to prepare, and then to integrate what you learn in your drug session. And we did not do that much. We just sort of helped talk people through what to expect and how to use the session constructively. I don't know, Josh can probably fill in some details, but.
No, I think that was a perfect description. We did use, so we worked with this company, USONA, which is actually running large-scale clinical trials of psilocybin. And so they provided us with not only with the drug that we used, but also with their protocol. And, you know, the goal was to use their protocol. But, you know, as Dr. Nickel mentioned, it was an abbreviated version because their protocol was designed for individuals with serious mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Nickel, can you describe the setting in which this all was happening, just to provide sort of a visual picture for those who are listening to us now?
Yes. So this is actually a quite an important part of the whole process, the set and the setting. So the set, I tend to think of it more like, what's your internal mindset? How do you enter the experience? What are you thinking about? How are you feeling? But the setting is the context around you. And so anybody who's had a recreational experience with a psychedelic will usually say that what they were doing and who they were with was actually pretty influential to the experience had, whether it was good or bad or transformational or terrifying. And so one of the things that the years of research that is leading up to our study and also some of the indigenous cultural practices around psychedelics mm-hmm. is that approaching the experience with reverence is important, and that we need to reduce the external stimuli, so visual and auditory stimuli, motion, movement. So we have a special room in the lab that is sort of softly lit, mm-hmm. Quiet, has carpet, has a couch, has some pictures on the wall that we sort of debated a little bit on the decor, but really just like to have it not be too intrusive or bright. And then as people go into their drug session, we give them earphones and eye shades to reduce the amount of stimulus, because what we want them to do is focus inward mm-hmm. as they're having the drug experience and to not have that be distracted or interfered with by outside stimuli.
Yeah. Now, in 2022, former producer Jane Mather Glass spoke with Scott, a WashU undergrad who participated in this research study. He told her that when he took psilocybin as part of the study, he had an introspective experience.
I've never experienced this before in psychedelics, but I did feel like a very real sense of oneness with the world and like the universe. And beforehand I had written goals like as part of the procedures, and I thought it would be difficult. Even though I've taken psychedelics before, I wasn't really sure that those goals would be achieved, but I answered like personal conflicts and questions I had and resolved them. And it was a very useful and, like, beneficial experience for me.
Now, Scott added that the experience continued to have an effect on him by making him less stressed and annoyed by daily inconveniences. We also heard from Jeffrey via email. Jeffrey wrote, "I've had two experiences using peyote buttons. Both experiences were in extremely favorable natural conditions surrounded by friends and good weather. I had profoundly peaceful, moving, and spiritual experience both times. It's difficult to describe. It seemed as if I was contacting aspects of myself that were previously unexperienced, and the others seemed to have the very same experience." We also want to hear from you. Have you tried psychedelics? What was your experience? Call us at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we will be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. Before the break, we heard from Scott, who has been through these trials at Washington University, and that email that we got from Jeffrey. Dr. Siegel, as you were hearing those, what was coming to mind about the association between what you have seen in brain scans specifically and the experiences that were described by those two?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing that comes to mind is that, you know, what we know about psilocybin used in therapeutic settings, one is that, and this was already kind of mentioned a little bit, is that context and kind of set and setting can be hugely important.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that was really interesting from our study was we had, you know, Ginger described this beautiful and peaceful room where individuals took the dose. But what she didn't mention is that then after about an hour after taking the dose, we had them climb into a loud banging MRI magnet. and for part of the time that they were in the magnet, they were, and this was kind of during the peak of the psychedelic experience, and for part of the time they were just resting and allowing their mind to wander. And for another part of the time, we had them actually focusing their attention on a specific task that we were asking them to do. And one of the things that was really fascinating observation to me was that if you looked at the effects of the drug on the brain,
mm-hmm.
It was much larger when individuals were having this internal experience and allowing their mind to wander. So it seemed to, you know, kind of magnify the effects of the drug. And we started to gain some understanding of why that is, you know, which I can get into if you're interested. But
mm-hmm.
but then just to kind of finish the point, then when we had individuals focus their attention on this particular task, it had this impressive effect of decreasing the disruption to their brain, you know, decreasing the kind of abnormal patterns of activity that we saw in their brain. And this has this really interesting parallel to the psychological observation of grounding,
mm-hmm.
Which is this, the idea that essentially, you know, if somebody is having a very powerful experience, often it's used when someone's having a negative experience, right? By bringing their attention to their physical environment, you can actually decrease the effects of the drug. So, you know, I mean, same person, same drug, same dose,
mm-hmm.
but it looked like, you know, maybe a third of the effect of the drug just by having them focus their attention on their physical environment.
Mm-hmm. We have Jim, who is calling from Edwardsville. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What a wonderful subject, and I'm glad there's clinical research finally being done on this. I took psychedelics back in the late 60s, and wish I could have had something cleaner, as most of us did. Also, I was done with it way before it was done with me. And so is there a way to clinically take this, but then, you know, when after an hour or so, be done with it? Is that development in the works? Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
And we also have Joe, who is calling from St. Louis. Joe, welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Hi, Joe.
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show. What is your question or comment?
Oh, yeah, just so in regards to psilocybin mushrooms, I have taken them in a non-clinical setting probably about 10 times over about 10 years. And they have been completely helpful for me in terms of putting things into perspective and just helping me to feel more at ease and more connected to a feeling of meaning during my daily walk through life. And it doesn't mean that, you know, every problem is eradicated. But again, yeah, just with helping to put things in perspective and, you know, and just with this sense of meaning, it really gives me a lot of joy to know that, you know, work is being done with, you know, to study their use as medicine, because they definitely have seemed like medicine to me.
Right. Thank you so much, Joe, for calling. Now, Dr. Siegel, you were raising your finger because you have something to say. Jim's question about being able to time out how long you're experiencing the effects, what of that?
Well, just to make the point that one of the interesting things going on right now, you know, there's been, as you mentioned, this increased interest in psychedelics in a variety of domains. And one part of that is that a number of pharmaceutical companies have kind of embarked and are at different stages of developing psychedelics and, mm-hmm. and creating even, you know, new psychedelics and creating psychedelic-like drugs. And part of the, you know, what's being explored is what is the optimal length of the experience, right? And for psilocybin, it's 6 hours kind of broadly. I mean, mm-hmm. it can vary, but 6 hours for LSD, it can be even a little bit longer than that. But for some other drugs, that psychedelic experience might be much shorter. Mm-hmm. And in some approaches, you might be able to even tailor the length of the experience to, you know, what's appropriate for someone, or if they're, let's say, as the caller mentioned, you know, having a negative experience, be able to shorten the length of the experience. And so one of the things that our research, I think, is useful for is that it provides a biomarker for some of these new drugs to be able to test in, you know, in smaller studies before launching, you know, large clinical trials, mm-hmm. to be able to say, are we hitting the right parts of the brain? Are we producing, you know, the desired effect? What might be the optimal dose, for example, with some of these drugs?
And speaking of dose, Dr. Nickel, Joe had said that he has tried psychedelics now, you know, close to a dozen times over the years. And one of the things that you've emphasized is that people should not interpret this study as a reason to self-medicate with psilocybin. But, you know, people are doing this already. Have you had a chance to talk with folks who are finding some kind of relief with psilocybin, maybe people like Joe? And what is it that they're reporting to you that aligns with the findings in the research that was published today?
Well, it's a great question. And I think, you know, what the caller was sort of alluding to is, and what Josh is talking about as well, is that there's a difference between what is the mechanism of the experience and what is the mechanism of the therapeutic effect. And are those the same? Mm-hmm. And so I think that this paradigm that we used to really understand what's happening in the brain while someone is on psilocybin starts to help us answer that question, because we can see, and then we can correlate it back with an experience that we can measure a little bit more carefully. And it also gives a richness to the qualitative experience that we don't have in mm-hmm. other treatments. So when you say, I saw demons laughing at me, or I felt the light of God, you know, we can actually, in some cases, walk back into where in the scan those things happen.
Right.
But we don't yet know if that's important for the therapeutic benefit, if that makes sense. And so there are investigators out there who are actively studying this right now, looking at the effects of psychedelics while you're under general anesthesia. So you're asleep, you don't have the experience, but do you still get the therapeutic effect? And mm-hmm. so the second caller is really describing kind of like the experience is what felt important. Mm-hmm. It's what's meaningful. And so that's why psychedelics are a little bit difficult to study in some respects, because the therapy, the process, the way you make sense of it does seem to be important. It's important for everything in mental health, really, if we're being honest, right? There's not really any type of mental health condition that doesn't benefit from processing and thinking about the experience and what you can learn from it. Yeah. But in this case, we still have a lot to learn. We don't have a way of really separating those things, but I think this study begins to open that door for
us. Well, we certainly have more to talk about in the future. I hope to take this up again. Dr. Ginger Nickel is an associate professor of psychiatry and researcher in the Healthy Mind Lab at the Washington University School of Medicine, and Dr. Joshua Siegel is an instructor in psychiatry at Washington University School of Medicine. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Today's segment was produced by Aula Kuzitz.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.